We'll travel along, singing a song, side by side. Don't know what's coming tomorrow. Maybe it's trouble and sorrow, but we'll travel the road, sharing our load, side by side. Through all kinds of weather, what if the sky should fall? Just as long as we're together, it doesn't matter at all. When they've all had their quarrels and parted, we'll be the same as we started. Just traveling along, singing a song, side by side.
Side by side, side by side, we'll keep on walking together. Life will be a ball. Let everyone, everyone join together, one for all. Oh, we ain't got a barrel of money. Maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel along, singing a song, side by side. Oh, we don't know what's coming tomorrow. Maybe it's trouble and sorrow, but we'll travel the road, sharing our load, side by side.
Through all kinds of weather, what if the sky should fall? Just as long as we're together, it doesn't matter at all. When they've all had their quarrels and parted,
we'll be the same as we started. Just traveling along, singing a song, side by side.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benning speaking. Welcome to the series finale of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. I want to start off by saying thank you to Stacy and Mindy for doing such a great job of introducing all of these wonderful episodes of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show that they've been doing for the last 6 months or so. I also want to thank Walter Tetley for being in the show and playing Julius Abruzzo. He'll always be remembered for that and playing Leroy. This month would have been his 100th birthday if he were still with us. So I just thought I'd give him a special shout out. But of course, thank you to Phil Harris, Alice Faye, Elliot Lewis, Gail Gordon, Sheldon Leonard, Frank Nelson, so many actors have been in this show one time or another, so it's just been a real experience being able to share these 9 years worth of episodes. I also want to thank Radio Spirits for putting out 8 great sets of episodes, 20 episodes in each set, that comprise 160 episodes. Out of the 160, about 140 of them or more had never been heard before since they originally aired. So they've added more to OTR collecting of shows and listening, our ability to listen to shows, than anyone I can think of in recent memory. Just because in the same time frame, 10 years ago when I started this podcast, there were 110 episodes that I could have shared of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. Now there are over 250 episodes, which is, like I say, amazing. Considering Jack Benny, there's been no new episodes added since I've started airing the shows. With Fibbermigi and Molly, maybe there's been a couple more that have been found. Gildersleeve, maybe one or two have been found. I can go on and on and on, but usually it's not more than, you know, a dozen episodes of any given show at most have been found over the last 20 years. But to have 150 new episodes, it's just crazy. So, and of all the shows that I'd like that to have a bunch of episodes found, this is probably the one that I'd most like to have them found for. And I say that because most other shows, it seems like television has been able to copy that format or copy the idea, and so you've heard the idea before, seen it before. With the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show, it is so unique. It's never really been done on television or in any other format or in any other radio show. It's this whole partnership that Elliot Lewis and Phil Harris have had has been unbelievable and just unique in such a way that it's just hard to even describe it. Of all the shows I can think of on radio, this is the one that I would be most likely to play for someone as their first radio show, just because I think it appeals to almost everyone. I've said before, when we play it in the car as we're driving on a trip somewhere, this is the only radio show I can play where my wife will enjoy it, both my kids will enjoy it, and I'll enjoy it. Everything else, somebody wants to change the channel or the station or whatever, but not on Phil Harris and Alice Faye. And that they were able to keep that up for 9 years is just absolutely incredible. It's a real shame that this show was never brought to television. I truly believe if it was on television, it may not have had a 10-year run or anything. I could see it have, you know, 2 to 5 successful seasons. But I do think that there'd be a good chance of it being thought of as in the same league with I Love Lucy, The Andy Griffith Show, MASH, All in the Family, where just of the top 5 or 6, 10 shows that have been on in television history, certainly the 10 comedies, it would be considered amongst those. To hear more on that, let's turn it over to Alice Faye and get her thoughts on the show.
We had tremendous writers, too, and it was all, it was terrific. It was really going.
Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet.
Yeah, they were terrific.
You came in at a time, just the perfect time for radio,
yeah,
46.
Right. Yeah, right.
But by the time you left in 54, so much television had come in on this.
Well, Phil wouldn't do it. I'm sorry. I think that's one of the... one thing I really am sorry for is that we didn't go into television. But he didn't want to do it. He couldn't see another family show on TV. He was afraid. Uh-huh. He was afraid we wouldn't.
It's too bad because I would say that the Phil Harris Alice Faye show was not another family show. It was a very special show.
It was really funny.
And your personalities could have easily translated to television.
Yeah, he couldn't see it. You couldn't tell him that.
Maybe he didn't want all the extra work, huh?
Maybe.
But TV is a hard hard job. Now,
I don't know.
He did have a hard time, really, didn't he, for a while, doing the Benny Show, and then, boom, immediately...
Because in the rehearsals and everything.
Yeah. And then Benny moved to CBS.
Yeah. But Benny was great to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he helped him, and so that things didn't... everything sort of went along smoothly, the rehearsals and getting to work and all of that.
I want to talk for a couple of minutes about the Phil and Alice show, if we can. How much time did you have to devote to that radio show, generally speaking?
Well, let's see, we had a rehearsal on Friday, and then we rehearsed Sunday morning, and then we did the show Sunday afternoon.
So it was basically 2 days.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
2 days.
And you never saw the script before you walked in on Friday, probably.
Never.
Of course, the characters were so well defined.
Yeah. After a while, you knew what you were doing.
You had to do a little. One of the highlights was your song and Phil's song too. But that's what we looked forward to in every show, that the musical breaks.
And we had Walter Scharf with his, you know, music. He was a wonderful, wonderful arranger, Walter.
I need to ask you about Walter Tetley.
Yeah.
Now, he was on the Gildersleeve radio show as his Gildersleeve's nephew, Leroy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a wise kid on that show.
Cracking kid.
On your show, he was the grocery boy.
I brung the groceries. Julius Abruzzio.
brung the groceries.
Miss Faye, he said. Yeah. It was funny.
He had some wonderful comedy.
He had a great delivery.
Yeah. Now, he was a master of timing. He was he didn't lose an inch with Phil and Frankie, Elliot Lewis.
Yeah. Never.
He was a small person or a little person or something like that, wasn't he?
You know who he always reminded me of? The boy that used to do Philip Morris.
Oh, Johnny and Philip Morris.
He was, he was short.
Uh-huh.
He was kind of a different looking person.
But he was so funny.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Some of the characterizations that they got into with Elliot Lewis, and we had the privilege of talking to Elliot one time.
Did
he was telling us so much about this show, and he said that it was really first rate, and it really was.
Yeah. Well, Phil, tried to go first class and have the best, the best he could get.
Now that show was produced by the agency for Rexall, I guess, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they wove into the show the commercials even more so than, for example, in the Jack Benny show, the sportsman came in and they did a little business there.
Yeah,
and on Fibber McGee and Molly, you may remember that Harlow Wilcox for Johnson's Wax.
Right.
But in your show, half the show was dealing with Mr. Scott, who was the sponsor of, who represented Rexall, the sponsor, and they never even broke for a commercial in the middle. They just had all the stuff going through, whether Phil was going to have his contract renewed, and Gail Gordon came in on the show.
Yeah,
for
it was wonderful, too.
Did you enjoy doing all the radio stuff?
Oh, I loved it.
It was, at the same time, you're raising your family, and the show. You and Phil, husband and wife, and two daughters on the show. Of course, those were actresses.
Yeah, we tried to get the girls to do it, but they wouldn't. They wouldn't. No way.
They were too shy. Didn't want to do it.
Yeah, they were too shy now because they're sorry. that they didn't go ahead and try it. But we had two lovely girls there.
Now, let's see what Phil Harris has to add to this. His interview was so all over the map; it was hard to find a spot to kind of take, so this is where I found a bit that was about the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. He definitely was working Chuck Shaden a little harder in getting to some of the questions that Chuck Shaden wanted answered, which is too bad, but it kind of lets you know kind of where Phil was coming from.
And how did that come about? Did they come to you just as the band leader and say, hey, we want you on the band?
No, they were, don't you remember?
I'm asking.
They were
you.
Putting on all kind of bands.
Oh yeah, sure.
Every week,
Fitch Band Wagon had a different band.
So well, what the hell? They ran out of people, so they called on me.
But then,
no, they used
the
band every week.
Comedy? Yeah, but how did it change to the comedy?
What do you mean?
To Phil Harris and Alice Faye.
Well, Christ, I've been on with Jack Benny. I'm saying pretty funny things then, I think.
Yeah, sure.
And Alice Faye'd been around a little bit. She'd been a star for 100 years at the Century, so 20th century. So you mean where did we lose it? That's what you're trying to say. What happened to it?
No, I'm trying to say
you got it just
who
backwards.
Came up with the idea?
We always had it.
A situation.
We
want
to know how we lost it. That's what we want. What do you mean situation comedy?
To do the situation comedy.
Well, everybody was doing situation comedy. Oh, Fitch, and they wanted to try that.
They wanted to try.
Because they tried all the band leaders, and then they had, like Cass Daly was doing comedy, slapstick comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So then they wanted to go back to a family show, I guess.
And that's where you guys came in.
That's where Julius Abruzzo and all the Frankie Remley, who was somebody else, was playing all those things.
Yeah, no, well, that was...
Elliot Lewis.
Elliot Lewis was...
Was Remley. That's
Remley
right.
On that. Now, I want to tell you, I had a chance to talk to Elliot Lewis one time, and I mentioned this to him, and I would like to tell you, too, that I think that you and Elliot, as Phil and Remley, were to radio what Laurel and Hardy were to the movies and maybe what Gleason and Carney were to television, because you two guys worked so well together. You were just an absolutely perfect team.
I appreciate it because, I've always thought the same way. And I'll tell you something else about Elliot Lewis. He is a very astute guy. And he said at the time, and he's lived it out, that he would never work with anybody after me. And he never did. Yeah, we were like clockwork. See, he did the Mully guy and two or three things on the Benny show when I was on that show. And then when we came in, we fit together like a glove. It just, it, and like he said, and he had, I think, several, I would say several occasions to work with other people. And he said, no, not after Phil. He said, and then he went into producing, as you know.
Well, I don't think you could top that. Some of the
it was easy.
Crazy
it just used
things.
To flow. You know what I mean? His timing was. Of course, don't forget that he was a very important actor before he went with me.
Now let's close out these interviews with different members of the cast by going with Elliot Lewis, who is so thoughtful and so well prepared in his in getting his thoughts out that I can include a larger piece. So we're going to go with about a 15-minute piece of this wonderful interview that Chuck Shaden did with Elliot Lewis to give Alice Faye and Phil Harris kind of a break. Though this was over a decade earlier that this interview was done, so I think he's a little more lucid with his thoughts than they are at the point that they're getting interviewed. But anyway, here is Elliot Lewis.
Jack Benny, who was my teacher, really, I was here in Los Angeles when I was still going to school. I was going to junior college down here. And right across the street is the KHJ building. When I was 18, I worked over in that building. It was then NBC. It had just been built. And I worked in that building for Jack Benny. And then on and off, I worked for him for whenever, all of those years.
You mean on the air?
On the air as an actor, never playing Remley, always another character, because Remley never appeared until he appeared on the Harris show. But Jack was always fond of Phil and me and of what we were doing and was most helpful and kind of guided us and gave suggestions and everything. And I remember sitting down with him one day and I said, please explain something to me. I know that when Phil and I work, that it's funny and the jokes are funny, but I don't understand why the laughs are so big. What are we doing? He said, well, you found a wonderful thing in that relationship, you two guys. The two of you say and do what everybody in the audience would like to say and do in a similar situation if they had the nerve. But nobody has that kind of nerve that you two guys have, and that's what people are laughing at. They're just delighted. Because it always surprised me. You know, we'd say something, you know, like you stick Tetley in the oven and he says, let me out, and you just wait and say, what do you think? You know, people are screaming. And it is, as you think about it, it's ridiculous. You don't leave somebody in an oven. But that we would even consider it and think about it and stand there and say, well, I don't know whether, you know, and talk about it, and this poor soul is in the oven screaming and yelling and banging on the oven door. So it's very kind of you to remember that, and I had just, as I say, I just remembered it myself a couple of weeks back.
Well, there was one where Phil and Remley were, you know, they were marching down the street behind an elephant or something, you know, on Hollywood Boulevard or some such thing like that. And I can remember, I just heard this not too long ago, as a matter of fact, and I, you know, there could be no way that you could do that on television.
No.
Never.
No. We did one, I remember, that... Dick Chevalier and Ray Singer wrote, where they buy a racehorse, and the description of the racehorse was so hilarious, and of course you couldn't do it on television. You can't get a horse who is running slowly or cannot run more quickly because his stomach is dragging on the ground. But, you know, that these men would buy this and then consider it. They're talking about it and say, does it look right to you? And no, I think there's something wrong. All no horse shouldn't look like that, and that they're, you know, marvelous relationship, very well written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevalier.
They wrote the whole series.
They didn't write the first.
It started
26
on
weeks
the Fitch
or
bandwagon,
so.
Didn't it?
Right, and I wasn't on it at first. I was doing something else. And Remley, real Frank Remley, is a left-handed guitar player who worked with Phil's band. and worked on the Benny Show. Dear, dear, marvelous man. Well, they decided when Phil and Alice had their own show, they decided that, you know, the thing to do would be to use Phil's best friend, Frankie. So they wrote it in and they said to Remley, you know, here you go. And he got up and he couldn't read it. He was a guitar player. He wasn't an actor. So I had worked with all of them a long time on the Benny Show. And we all knew each other and were close friends. And I was doing a show down the hall. And Phil came in. They did the first show without me. And he came in and they cut the Remley thing. And he said, we're going to write Remley in on the second show. And, you know, the script is ready and we have to establish the relationship. And could you come in and do it? And it'll take you a couple of hours. And then that'll be the end of it. And I came in and I did it, and we got the kind of laughs that I've been describing to you, which neither of us understood, and we did it every week for 9 years. But that's how it happened. I think Mosier and Connolly wrote the first 26, Joe Connolly and Bob Mosier wrote the first 26 shows. Mm-hmm. Then Ray and Dick wrote it until possibly the last year when they were off on something else, and I have a memory of Marvin Fisher and Jack Douglas working on the show. Because I remember Jack wrote some wild, wild material. He's so funny anyway. Funny stuff. But Singer and Chevalier were responsible for the show.
Was there Rexall? Started with Fitch, and then Rexall came
right.
in there.
And then RCA had it in the last couple of years.
In the 50s, more.
Yeah, we were working for the dog. His master's voice, you know. I remember that taking a couple of trips and, you know, where you're helping with the advertising and everything, and I remember those little statues.
Mm-hmm.
What's the dog's name? Didn't Crosby do a
Nipper?
Picture? Nipper.
Was it Nipper?
Nipper, yeah. He's the head cocked as he's listening in front of the speaker. I remember that very well.
Well, you did so much more in radio than, I shouldn't say than just the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show, because that was... That actually was one of the greatest, funniest comedy shows on radio, with a storyline with the variety Phil and Alice singing.
Yeah.
But the continuity of characters, as you said, Walter Tetley was Julius.
Julius, the delivery boy. And Sheldon was all kinds of things, and was in and out as a friend of Phil's and Frankie's that Alice couldn't bear because he was so obviously conning everybody. The way Lenny does.
I have to ask, on the Benny Show, whenever they referred to Frankie Remley, he was, of course,
never heard
lush.
It. Yeah.
He was a drunkard. Now, was he really?
Oh, no.
That? No,
no, no. Very sweet, nice, quiet man. And a really dear man. I remember when he passed away, which is, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago now. I remember that I had a real pang. And I hadn't seen him in years, but he was... He was a dear man, very nice man.
It's interesting how they made a fictional character out of a real person.
Yes. Well, that's the secret of Jack Benny.
Uh-huh.
Jack Benny, who was the comedy genius of all time and who taught all of us, that was his theory, that you made jokes out of nothing. They would make a joke out of something that started at the beginning of a half-hour show. By the end of the show, you're laughing hysterically. Mm-hmm. Nothing funny, really. It wasn't a joke. But it was just, the gas man and the car and all of the things. The train to Cucamonga. And I remember a routine we did on the Benny Show where every year... Jack and the group go to New York, and that therefore is the scene in the railway station. And Frank Nelson is saying, yes, he's selling tickets, and Jack's in line, and Mel is on the speaker going, Dan Cucamonga, you know, and every year we did this. And I was always the man in line in front of Jack, and Jack's trying to get a ticket, buy his ticket to go to New York. And the first routine that we did, and the reason we then continued it, was that we took the lyric of Glockamora, and all I did was read the lyric. And Jack was very nervous about it. He said, I don't know. Do you think you ought to be crazy? Or, you know, is that going to be funny? And I said, I don't know. It just seems to me that it's funny if I just ask Frank Nelson these questions. How are things in Glockamora? And he says, fine. And I said, is that little brook still rippling there? And he said, oh, yes. Well, you can imagine. And you're doing this, Frank and I talking, and Jack Benny is standing behind me just staring at the audience with that look, you know, when you did the elbow stuff. Well, what is funny about it? I don't know. It's just, but it was funny. It was funny stuff. And so, well, Jack would create these characters, and he created the image of Phil and the image of, therefore, Remley. He created Phil and Remley, image for them and characters for them, so strong that Phil and I and Alice and the real little girls were in the Santa Claus Lane parade on Thanksgiving down Hollywood Boulevard one year, and it was freezing cold. And without thinking, we each took a mug of coffee, hot coffee. And the girls were all bundled up warm, and one of them, the kid sat on my lap, and the other kid was on Phil's lap. And we stopped at one place, and I reached to get the coffee. I was really shivering. I was so cold. And I picked it up, and Phil, without seeing that I was doing it, did the same thing, and he picked his up. And we had stopped, and there were crowds on either side of the street, and they started to laugh. They thought we were drinking booze. They thought we were stoned, you know, and you don't know what to do. You got a little kid on your lap, and the audience is laughing because they think you're drinking whiskey, which we weren't. We're just hot coffee. You know. But that's how firmly the Benny Show created those characters and established those characters. I remember doing a show Jack created for those characters, the fact that they were musicians who hadn't the faintest idea what they were doing. Knew no more about the music business, had no more right to be musicians. This was so firmly established that on Phil's show, then years later, we did a scene that I still recall of a music rehearsal. Phil is conducting and Remley's playing guitar, and Phil stops and says, wait a minute, doesn't sound right. What have you got there? Says to Remley. And Remley says, there's a black dot and then another black dot. And the audience started to laugh. Now, you figure they'd have to be musicians to know. They didn't. They just knew that we hadn't the vaguest idea what we were talking about. Phil said, I think there's supposed to be three black dots. He said, no, there's one here that's a white dot. And he said, where is it? And I don't know, whatever the thing, that's a fly. No, that's a real, you know, all of these jokes. But people were laughing because the characters had been established by Jack.
There was one series of shows in the Harris and Fate sequence there that were somehow or other you, as Frankie Remley, signed the contract with Rexall instead of Phil. And Phil was, for two shows at least, it went on, you know. And you were going to team up with Alice and do the whole thing.
I remember the biggest laugh we ever got, and I really, to show how little I know about what I'm doing, I had no idea would get this kind of laugh, and it made me kind of nervous. The story, very simply, was that Alice says to Phil, Remley is not your friend. He doesn't really care about you. He's a terrible, vile person who was looking to take advantage of you, and you've got to be very careful. And Phil keeps saying, no, that's not true. And they keep putting things in the way until finally they say, Phil says, all right, I tell you what. When he comes to the door this morning, you tell him I just died of a heart attack. And then you'll see what a friend I've got. Well, I thought, my goodness, are we really going to do that? Play the scene in front of the audience. Doorbell. Alice goes to the door. She's crying. And Remley says, what's the matter? What is it, Alice? And she says, Phil just died of a heart attack. And there was a long pause, and I said, Alice, will you marry me? Well, I tell you, we couldn't not stop the people from laughing. The studio was shaking. It was just this explosion of laughter that he had the gall. Didn't even wait, didn't say, gee, I'm sorry, nothing. Couldn't wait to get his hands on that money. And I thought, well, no, we really can't do that. Ray and Dick said, it's funny, do it. Just do it. Phil said, don't worry about it. Well, they were right.
Did you have to do a lot of rehearsal for that show?
No. As a matter of fact, by the time we were in our 7th, 8th, and 9th year, we were on tape. The show was no longer live. And we would record. We'd tape the show on a Friday for Sunday broadcast. And we would meet at around noon, around 11 o'clock in the morning on Friday, and read the script around the table and then make some cuts and changes. Go get our lunch and come back and read it again on mic to balance it, make additional cuts and changes. And then I was producing and directing over at CBS. So Phil would go and do his business and Alice do whatever she had to do. I'd go over and work on scripts for Suspense or On Stage or Broadway or one of the shows, Crime, that I was doing at CBS. And come back dressed to do a show in front of an audience at 5:30, and the audience would come in 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and we'd do a little warm-up and do the show from 6:30 to 7, and Phil and Alice got on the train, went back to Palm Springs, and I went home, and that was it. So we would devote most of a Friday to it, and that was about all.
Of course, by that time, the characters had been so finely refined and keenly developed. And
the you're able to do in radio, especially in comedy and radio, a kind of humor that you cannot do anywhere else. And once it is set up, as you have just said, the characters are set up, the situation is set up, and you have the kind of writing that we were getting from Ray Singer and Dick Chevalier, there are no problems. Everybody knows what they're doing, or they wouldn't be there. And if it wasn't a good show and the audience didn't like it, it wouldn't be on the air. You know, you find out very quickly whether it's working or not. And as always in almost anything, but especially in show business, if it's going easily, it's usually on the right track. It's not hard to have a hit. It's hard to have a failure because it's rough. You know, you keep trying to fix something that you should just throw away. When it's going well and all of the elements are together, wow, you know, and it's no problems. It just run.
Now let's take it over to Stacy and Mindy to introduce the episode.
We are very happy and proud to bring to you the co-presidents of the Wednesday Afternoon Fine Arts League,
Stacy and Mindy,
in Cole Sporter's great number, Friendship Maestro.
Howdy, everyone. It's time for another Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. This one aired June 18th, 1954, and it is called Vacation Without Elliot. And I'm rather sad to bring this one to you because it's the final one that we have, at least that Buck has given us to do an intro for. So I don't know if it's actually the final run in the series, but it's the final one that we had to do an intro for, at least for a while. And I'm going to miss this. I love listening to these shows.
Me too.
But this one is fun. I mean, I'm sure everyone has been on those family vacations where you're trying to pack everything up and get everything just right and decide what you're doing. And this kind of goes along with that. But it's mainly all about how Elliot was not invited and he doesn't seem to understand.
Or care.
Or care, exactly.
Several episodes.
I don't want to say sight comedy because you're not actually seeing, but it's this imagination sight. So They create these vivid imagination pictures that you can just see in your mind that are hilarious.
Yeah.
And Elliot just does his part so well. It's just like, oh, Elliot, honey, listen to Alice, listen to Bill.
Elliot's one of those characters to me that in real life he would be obnoxious and get on my nerves and I would try to avoid him as much as possible.
Yeah.
But on a comedy show, he's my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, he kind of reminds me of Sean in the TV show Psych. You know, if I were ever actually around him, I'd be like, oh, go away. but he's really funny to watch. Yeah. And it's the same thing with Elliot, just like you said. And yeah, this is a fun one. I think it's a good end to our little run of the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. So it leaves you laughing, leaves you wanting more.
They're going on vacation too.
That's true. Vacations all around. All right. Well, everyone, enjoy this wonderful show. And again, it's called Vacation Without Elliot. But is it really? That last part was me. All right, everyone. Enjoy.
RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, and first in television, presents the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. For your enjoyment, here is the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, transcribed, written by Jack Douglas and Marvin Fisher, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, the orchestra under the direction of Skip Martin, and yours truly, Bill Forman. Tonight, two good friends are celebrating their fifth anniversary. Who are they? Well, here are some clues. After 5 years, they're still in a spin. They were made for each other, and together they make beautiful music. Give up? Well, they're both in the RCA family. I guess you know that our friends are a 45 record and a Victrola 45 phonograph. 5 years ago, RCA Victor introduced the now famous 45 system of recorded music. Since then, 3 million Victrola 45 phonographs have been sold, and over 70 million RCA Victor 45 records. This widespread popularity is richly deserved, because this 45 system gives you a record and a phonograph especially designed for each other. The result? You can enjoy almost 2 hours of continuous music at its brilliant best. And thanks to the 45 extended play record, you can enjoy twice as much music for less money. A visit to your dealer will convince you that the RCA Victor 45 system, on its fifth anniversary, is now a better buy than ever. Now the stars of the RCA Victor program, Alice Faye and Phil Harris. Well, summer finally arrived as usual, and everybody's vacation-minded, including Phil Harris and Alice Faye. With most people, this is the time of year when people are filled with joyous anticipation, a happy time. But not so in the Harris household. In fact, right now, a small argument is gaining momentum.
Phil, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again.
Yeah, I know you said it before. I know.
Well, I mean it, Phil. You and I are entitled to have one vacation alone, all by ourselves.
Alice, why are you being so selfish?
I'm not being selfish. Besides, traveling is for adults. It just isn't appreciated by a 12-year-old mentality.
But Alice, Elliot is my best friend. Alice, why do you always pick on
Phil,
him?
I'm not picking on Elliot. Every woman's husband has a guy he likes to pal around with. But you overdo it.
In what way?
I'll tell you. When you were courting me, who was always cluttering up my living room? Elliot Lewis. When we went on a picnic, who tagged along? Elliot Lewis. When you and I got married, who did I stumble over in the church? Elliot Lewis. And after the ceremony, who was the flower girl we found in our honeymoon suite?
Well, you got to admit he looked pretty cute in his little white pinafore. What a picture he made. Standing there in his bobby socks and holding that bouquet. I thought he was smelling them flowers till I heard him gurgle.
I know you're very fond of Elliot, but just cross him off the list for our vacation this year. I'd like to go to Lake Tahoe and alone for once.
Oh, wait a minute, Alice. Don't be too hasty. He's your friend, too. Now, think back, honey. Think back to all them good times we had together. Do you remember how we met Elliot for the first time?
Yes, I remember, Phil. It was on one of our first dates. We were coming back from doing a benefit at Santa Barbara.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll never forget it. It was the first time that I'd ever been on the bill with a big star like you. We were driving along. Just you and me. And I was trying to figure out a way to get better acquainted with you. Gee, Miss Fay, it was nice of you to drive home with me from the benefit.
Well, it's such a nice evening.
Yeah. I thought it'd be kind of a good chance for us to get acquainted. Hey, that reminds me. Would you like to play a little game that helps people get acquainted?
Sure.
Okay. Now, look. I'll say a word, and no matter what word I say, then you say a word that it reminds you of, huh?
Okay.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the first word. Boy.
Girl.
Alone.
Together.
Moonlight.
Romance.
Oh, this is going to be too easy. Wow. Now, look. Here's the next word, and it's the most important. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Kiss.
Mother. Don't you kiss your mother?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Okay, now let's try it again. Hug.
Embrace.
Now you're catching on. Arms.
Entwined.
Mother.
McCree.
Could I have left something out of this game? There was a lot more action to it the night Marjorie Main worked it on me.
You know, Phil, it was a lucky thing you were on that benefit tonight. You were fine as Sir Galahad.
Hey, thank you. I was a good actor, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I was certainly glad that leading man couldn't get there. You probably won't believe it, but I never did know acting before. I love playing the part of Galahad. Look, Miss Fay, why don't we take the love scene over again while we're riding along? You know, the one where you play Lady Guinevere. Is that her name? Guinevere?
I guess so.
Guinevere. I told him to spell it phonetically. Honey, will you play the part again of Lady Guinevere? Because mm-hmm. I've got that part memorized.
Well, swell. And it'll pass a little time.
Yeah.
Ah, Galahad, how fortunate is the woman who gains thy favor in all thy things.
Look at that guy. He's out in the middle of the highway waving his thumb.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't hit him. You'd better pick him up, Philly. He looks tired.
Oh, okay. Maybe he's not going very far, I hope. Hey, would you like a ride, buddy?
Gee, yeah, thanks. I'm in a hurry to get to Hollywood. I'd sure be grateful if you'd take me.
Yeah, okay. Get in.
Gee, yeah, thanks. Now, don't mind me, folks. You two just go right ahead with whatever you were talking about.
Ah, Galahad. Let me hear from your lips the tale of your brave exploits.
I fear that thou wilt think my story fanciful. My way to your castle was beset by many dangers. With my fateful crossbow, I slew a three-headed dragon breathing sheets of flame from every nostril.
Blow me out at the next corner.
What's the matter?
You got a worse hangover than I have.
Now, wait a minute, buddy.
And another thing, Mac. Who painted all them clever signs all over this jalopy?
I painted them. I painted the signs. I painted them. What's wrong with them?
Oh, they are real jazzy.
Yeah, that one painted on the back's a real gasser. We don't go fast, we don't go slow. Let's park a while and vo-de-o-do. Oh, boy, are you a cornball?
Okay, that does it. Get out.
Huh?
You heard me. Get out. Get out.
Okay. But I couldn't help laughing. That's the funniest thing that's happened since last week when I went to a dance with my water pistol and squirted chicken fat all over Lawrence Welk.
Get in.
Come on, buddy. I told you, I'm in a hurry to get to Hollywood.
Why is such a hurry to get there?
Well, I'll tell you, Miss Faye, I'm a musician. I'm looking for a job. I got a great act. I'm a one-man band.
Oh? You know, I've never seen a one-man band. What do you do?
Oh, it's fantastic. I strap two brass cymbals to my knees. I strap a bongo drum to my chest. I hold a washboard under my chin. I've got a ukulele on my left elbow, a tambourine on my right elbow, two cowbells hanging on my ears. Then I strum a guitar and play a kazoo in my bare feet with my pants rolled up.
In your bare feet with your pants rolled up?
Yeah. While I'm playing, I crush a few grapes. Oh. Last year, I won the Tennessee Ernie Award.
Oh!
I'll give you an example of my kazoo playing right now. Listen. A one, and a two, and...
And he don't like the signs on my car.
Yes, Phil, I remember very well how we met Elliot. How could I forget? He's been around here ever since.
Yeah, yes, I know, but... Well, you've got to admit that he's such a thoughtful guy. Never forgets a birthday or any sentimental occasion. Let me ask you something. You remember our first Valentine's Day together? He didn't forget it.
No. I remember that Valentine's Day. When we got up in the morning, there he was. Passed out on our front lawn.
Yeah, but he was laying there in the shape of a heart. Let me ask you something else. How about that beautiful Valentine present that he bought you? That 5-pound box of chocolates with the brandy centers. Ooh, they were delicious.
Yeah. Drained. But delicious. Phil, I still say that Elliot is not going to clutter up this year's vacation for us. As long as we've been married, he's been just like your shadow.
But honey, after we were married, Elliot didn't have any place to live. We just had to take him in.
I know. I'll never forget the next day after we were married. I was going to cook you the greatest wedding breakfast that had ever been cooked. I was waiting for you to come down.
A bowl of bourbon, a sandwich, and... Oh. Good morning, sweetheart. What are we going to have for breakfast?
Oh, wait till you see, darling. And I'll just have everything ready in a jiffy. I'll get the stuff out of the refrigerator. Honey. Honey, what happened? Look at this. The refrigerator is empty. I put a dozen eggs, a half a pound of butter, and a pound of bacon in here last night. What could have happened to that much food?
Elliot!
Good morning, folks. How are the two little newlywed?
Now, don't give me that. Did you eat a dozen eggs, a half a pound of butter, and a pound of bacon?
Yeah.
Phil.
Gee, Curly, I'm sorry I ate all that stuff, but I was hungry.
Okay, I guess it's all... Hey, wait a minute.
Hmm?
Where'd you get all them scratches on your face?
From the cat. I never fought so hard for a saucer of milk in my life.
Gee, what a grout. Will you stop? I'm gonna tell you something, Elliot. This eating bit can go too far. Now, look, I don't mind earning the money to support my little wife here, but I am not sure that I can afford a boarder with such a high-class taste as you have. Last night, you got into the pantry cupboard and ate a jar of imported dates, some caviar, some English mincemeat, a whole jar of Chinese ginger. Look, the next thing I know, you're liable to call up the store and order 10 pounds of Egyptian turtle eggs.
That's good, Curly. Egyptian turtle eggs. That's good.
Yeah.
Anybody home? I brung the Egyptian turtle eggs.
What?
They're in season now, Curly.
Shut up! I can't understand. Hiya, Julius. Hey, this is Julius Abruzzio, Alice. He's been my grocery boy for a long time. Hey, Julius, this is my new bride. This is Miss Alice Faye.
Oh, I know Miss Faye. I gotta see all the pictures. Golly, Mr. Harris is pretty lucky to marry you.
Well, I feel I'm pretty lucky to marry him. He's such a popular man. And one of the few handsome, really eligible bachelors left.
Oh, then you read his ad.
Julius.
I don't know why he put that word popular in the ad. Around the Palladium, this guy was known as Double Anxious.
Kid.
In fact, he was so unpopular, Arthur Murray had to teach him by telephone.
Grocery boy.
But lo and behold, Mr. Harris finally took a personality course, and that is what made him the social tiger that he is. But just last month, the popcorn girls at the Zenda Ballroom voted him the guy they'd most like to butter up with.
Now, tell me, that's enough. I'd have brought
you... Gee, I'm glad to hear all these things about Curly. I just met him, and I don't know him very well.
Keep it that way. Miss Faye, did Mr. Harris ever tell you the high rank he had in the United States Navy?
No, he didn't.
Well, naturally, he didn't tell you because he's shy. And he just won't talk about himself.
He won't?
Sure he will, but I'm rolling. When Mr. Harris was in the Navy, he turned down a chance to become an admiral because he refused to be coddled. He volunteered for a more important naval job, and he finally got it. Second Commodore in charge of tactical logistic oceanography.
Gosh, what did he do?
When the tide rolled in, he stood on the beach and yelled, "Here it comes again!" When he left the Navy, they gave him a medal. A gold jellyfish.
Kid!
With Runyon clusters.
Get out of here! All right already. What are you laughing at?
That kid. I think he's a pretty funny little guy. He sure topped you.
All right, he did he? Well, I'm going to show you something that'll make you laugh on the other side of your face. Take a look at this. It's the grocery bill. $19.80 for 2 days, and it's mostly on account of you and that appetite.
But, Curly, it isn't just me. I haven't told you before, but I'm eating for two now.
What?
That's That's right. Me and my kazoo.
And, Phil, you've got to admit, I've never been stubborn about anything before, honey, but this time I insist that we go on our vacation alone. I just know how it'll be if it...
Hello, everybody.
Oh, hello, Dad.
Oh, hi, Dad. Hey, Alice. Yeah. Let me ask you. Now, let's just put the question to my father, huh? Is that all right with
you?
Hey, Dad, you've been married a long time.
You can say that again, John.
Well, look, Dad, let me ask you something. Now, listen closely. If your wife was going to go on a vacation to Lake Tahoe and wanted to take an old friend with her, would you let her do it?
No, sure, if he promised he'd never bring her back. You know I don't mean that, John. Your mother is a wonderful woman, and we have the perfect system for a happy marriage. No matter what happens during the day to upset us, every night before we go to sleep, we shake hands.
That's nice.
Yes, and when the bell rings in the morning, we come out fighting.
Look, Dad, you can't fool me. You've been using this routine since you played the old Keith circuit. Now, look, Alice and I are going on our vacation up to Lake Tahoe, and I'd kind of like to take Elliot with me because, well, we can fish and play golf together, but Alice says, no, he can't go,
Well, whatever you do, I wouldn't leave him here at your house while you're gone.
Now, wait a second, Dad, just a minute. If Elliot ain't anything else, he's honest.
Well, that's what I used to think about your Aunt Matilda.
You don't mean to say that Aunt Matilda was crooked?
Like a snake with the cramps. Why, that sweet old lady fooled everybody. I can still see her standing there with the silver in her hair and the store detective taking it out one fork at a time. Where are you going up to Lake Tahoe?
Well, I've always wanted to stay at a place called the Cal Neva Lodge.
My vaudeville show played at Lake Tahoe years ago, but they didn't have any high-class hotels like that in those days.
Oh, where'd you stay?
Oh, it was just a little place, and they were kind of sorry they took us in. They didn't know we had an animal act in the show. Those animals got into more mischief.
You mean the animals got loose in the hotel?
Yeah. And the elephant and the giraffe were sure having a lot of fun. First, the giraffe would stop in front of a room, and he'd look over the transom, and then he'd lean down and whisper in the elephant's ear, and then the elephant would laugh. Well, I sure hope you have a good time up at Lake Tahoe. Bye.
Phil.
All right, Alice. All right. Let's not go through it again. I surrender. We'll go to Tahoe alone. No Elliot.
All right, Phil. And he's coming up the front walk now, so you may as well tell him and get it off your chest.
Okay, I'll tell him.
Hi, Curly.
Elliot. Sit down.
Don't say another word, Curly. I know what you're going to say. I should have known it before from the little hints I've heard around here. I've been a burden to you. Tagging along with you and Alice on your vacations. Spoiling your fun. I was selfish. I just wanted to be close to you because I love you so much.
Elliot,
Don't stop me. You know what I did to make up for everything? Here. You know what's in this envelope? I knew you wanted to go to the Cal Neva Lodge. So here's reservations to the Royal Suite. Take them. Take them. And I hope you have a wonderful time.
Say, honey, wasn't it wonderful and thoughtful of Elliot to get us this beautiful suite here at the lodge? Just look at it. Isn't it beautiful?
Oh, yes, Phil, it's just lovely. You can see the entire lake from our window, but I don't know, somehow I'm not as happy as I thought I'd be.
Well, honey, don't worry. Maybe we have to get used to the altitude. Yeah. Hey, Alice, look here at these little... It's little things. See what I was trying to tell you? Now, look. Wasn't it thoughtful of Elliot to get the management to put a piano in here and a record player just for us?
Yes, Phil. And look at the wallpaper in this suite. It's such a gay pattern. It's so much like you. Musical notes, trumpets, drums, violins.
Yeah. Elliot had him do that, too. Just because he wanted us to feel happy and cheerful when we woke up in the morning. That's why.
Hey, Phil. Phil, look over here. Isn't this strange?
Oh, what?
This big lump in the wallpaper.
Yeah, what? What do you suppose it is? Elliot! Curly!
Bingo!
Alice and Phil will be back in just a moment. Enjoy the magic of cool, quiet, vacation fresh air right in your own home this summer with the RCA air conditioner. Here is America's finest air conditioner, brought to you by the great name of RCA and offering these famous RCA features. The wonderful RCA Heart of Cold compressor for top cooling capacity. The ingenious RCA Hushabye fans that push cooled air gently and softly through your room. The amazing RCA climate tuner with push-button controls that lets you choose the kind of indoor weather you want. And the thermostat that keeps room comfort at a constant, even level. And the new RCA air conditioners are equipped with permanent-type aluminum mesh filters built to last the life of the unit. So choose an RCA air conditioner now. And when you do, get an RCA factory service contract, too. America's finest air conditioner deserves America's finest service.
Hi, folks, this is Phil again. Ladies and gentlemen, for the past 4 years, Alice and I have been on the air for RCA Victor. But tonight, we are terminating that happy association with this show. So at this time, I'd like to thank RCA and everybody for being so nice to us. Our producer, our writers, the band, sound men, technicians, and all the rest of our swell gang. Good night. And we'll see you all again next fall.
Good night, everybody.
As this is the last show of the present series, I have a special message for Alice and Phil. The folks at RCA Victor want you to know that they've really enjoyed working with you and think you're the nicest couple they've ever met. So to Alice, Faye, and Phil Harris, it's best wishes and good luck from the folks at RCA Victor. Next week, same time, same station, RCA Victor presents Perry Como in a star-studded review featuring the greatest in radio of the last 35 years. Don't miss it.
RCA Victor 45 extended play gives you twice as much music for what you pay. Recorded music of the highest quality on RCA Victor 45 EP. So whenever you buy records, always say, give me RCA Victor 45 extended play.
RCA Victor 45 extended play records give you more music for less money than any other type of record. Twice as much music as the biggest old-style record, and you save almost half. It's like getting an extra record free. RCA Victor 45 EP gives you up to 16 minutes of music on one 7-inch non-breakable record. Opera, classics, semi-classics, and pops. All on RCA Victor 45 extended play.
So whenever you buy records, always say, give me RCA Victor 45 extended play.
This has been an NBC Radio Network presentation. We'll be right back.
Can You Top This? Follows W.W. Chapman and the news tonight on the NBC Radio Network.